A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. So we knew today's Q&A podcast would go down well with you guys, but I don't think we realised just how many questions we were going to receive and just how many people need a GP right now. So let's get straight into it. Please welcome to the podcast, author, brand new book out, How to Have a Baby. It's Dr. Sarah Kayatz.
Hello, hello, hello.
So many of my friends are buzzing if like their brother or sister start dating a doctor. They're like, oh my God, yes, we've got a doctor in the family. Oh my God, there's a GP, like a school mum at my class is a GP. And it's like, a big brag. So this is what I'm going to do today. I'm going to go and I'm like, I actually had a Zoom with a GP this afternoon. So yeah, I think
everyone's excited
property.
About it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow, I've never felt so wanted in all my life. Thank you.
And also fresh from this morning, how was it today? Were you on with Kat and Ben?
Kat and Ben, yeah, absolute pros.
Dream
the
team.
Loveliest of people ever. And we were talking about asthma. So, you know, good old GP stuff. It was nice.
Okay. Asthma in grown-ups, asthma in kids.
We were just doing an overall, like, this is what happens in asthma. Because unfortunately, I don't know if you saw in the news, but there had been somebody who had died from an asthma attack. And it was just, trying to highlight that people do die from it. It is something that it should be taken seriously. There are ways to prevent it. So, you know, prevent it from escalating anyway. And so we were just trying to get everybody to be checking they're on the right inhalers, making sure they're seeing their GPs, making sure their inhalers aren't expired, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, oh, interesting. Wow. Gosh, that's really sad.
That is. Yeah, we've had a lot of questions. I'm not sure if we've had any. We probably have had some on asthma, but do you want to kick us off, Zoe?
Yeah, let's do it. Lots of questions around kids' eczema. Should prescribed creams cure or manage it? Because for us, it's relentless. That's from Becky.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, eczema can be really relentless and it can feel so frustrating because you think you're on top of it and then suddenly, boom, there's another flaring and it comes back. Unfortunately, it is a long-term condition. So it's a dry skin condition and we don't have a cure for it, but we do know how to try and manage it. In this case, it's a way of trying to get on top of the flares, but once you're on top of the flares, continue with, you know, various creams in order to try and sedate the eczema again so that it doesn't flare up again. It's always back to basics when it comes to eczema, because it's a dry skin condition. It's just about trying to lather yourself up with as much emollient, as much moisturizer as possible. And people don't tend to put enough on, is what I often find with my patients. You know, they put it on their kids and, yeah, they send them off to school and everything's great. But it absorbs so quickly, depending on how dry your skin is, that actually you need to be putting on enough that you could write your name in that cream with your finger. So, you know, that's a kind of fun way if you have kids to make sure that they're putting enough on themselves, you know, if they're doing their own. You just say, if you can write the first letter in your name with your finger in that cream, then you've got enough on you. Okay. So firstly, you know, that kind of stuff, making sure that in the bath you're not using any strong
perfumed
yeah. Products. You can even use just moisturizing products. You can even use the cream that you use as your moisturizer as your as your shower gel, or you know, as your bath wash, just trying to get as much moisture in there as possible. And then when you get the flares, usually we manage it with steroids.
Dr. Sarah, can I just ask you something quickly? I don't know if they're myths or not. Firstly, light treatment for eczema, yes or no?
So Yeah, light treatment is becoming more popular. Do you mean the kind of the red lights, or do you mean like UV light? Because there, some people use UV, but whilst it can help the eczema, unfortunately, we know that UV is not good for your skin, and the risks of skin cancer. It's the same with kind of acne and all these things, and psoriasis. That UV really helps, but unfortunately, it's got significant side effects that are not worth that risk of weighing up.
And firstly, is eczema linked to the gut at all?
Yes. So we've all heard about kind of the gut microbiome, but we've also got the skin microbiome. And we think that, you know, all of these things are linked, and we're only just at the beginning to start to understand how, you know, how our gut behaves is also how it manifests on our skin. Mm. So with things like eczema, of course, there are all the treatments and things like that we put on our skin to try and manage it. But we can also try and manage as much as we can from the inside out. So, you know, trying to maintain healthy guts, trying to maintain, exercise, good food, good enough sleep. All of these things help with our immune system and also help with managing how our body manifests the illness on our skin.
That's really interesting.
And can kids grow out of eczema? Because I thought my son had eczema and it just completely went, like completely just disappeared as soon as he stopped drinking milk. Yep. And I didn't know if that was an age thing, if that was just because of the milk or what it was. But honestly, the second he stopped drinking milk, he's never had it ever again.
Well, this is it. Many people have triggers for their eczema. And it sounds like in your case, your son's trigger with milk. He may have been either dairy intolerant or allergic to, you know, cow's milk protein or something like that. And that does often manifest on the skin. So it may very well be that, as in your son's case, you may want to keep a bit of a symptom diary, see if anything could be flaring it, try exclusions for, you know, only a couple of weeks. I'm not suggesting long-term exclusion of dietary things, especially in children, because they do need these things. But, you know, try it for a couple of weeks. If there's an improvement in the eczema, then, you know, reintroduce that thing that you think might be triggering it, see if it comes back. And if it does, then we know that that's likely to be their trigger.
Okay, interesting. Right, let's move on.
Someone has asked us to discuss the chickenpox vaccine. Both my kids have had chickenpox, and it's weird because I was actually going to go and get them the vaccine. In my head, I was like, right, Easter holidays, I'm going to go and get them the vaccine. This isn't this Easter, it was a couple of years ago. And then they both got chickenpox. Like, it's like I thought about it and then they got it. And I still, in my head, I still actually wish that I had have got it, because Axel's still got a big scar on his chest and Gigi's still got some scarring. And while that, you know, they were poorly and they've got through it and it was all fine, I still think, I actually still wish I had gone.
But it's not spoken about. It's not spoken about.
Yeah, people don't talk about it.
The chickenpox vaccine in the UK currently is still a private vaccination, and that's probably why it's not talked about that often. It's, you know, not as part of our usual routine schedule. And that's because we know that, firstly, chickenpox is, for most people, a quite mild, you know, a little bit uncomfortable, but doesn't tend to cause significant issues. It can in some cases, in some very, very rare cases, but for the whole, it's not thought to be a particularly dangerous virus to catch. And so it's not currently part of the schedule. Having said that, they are thinking about making it part of the schedule, because in the US, it is. It's routinely given. Everyone gets it. And also certain parts of Europe as well. So they're looking at all the data across those countries and seeing that actually, you know, it is reducing the number of hospitalizations still. It is reducing the number of complications. And it's not a hugely expensive vaccine to do either. So they are weighing up the costs and the health benefits versus the risks. And I think that they may consider it as a as part of the routine schedules, but we have to wait and watch that space. I don't know for certain. But yeah, it's an interesting one. You usually get it at about 12 months, the first dose, then you can get the second dose a month later. And we still don't know how long it gives you the protection for. We think it's, you know, hopefully going to be lifelong, because actually an adult getting chickenpox is not ideal, because it tends to be more severe in adults, and actually we're less tolerant. You know, when we get spots all over our face and body, you know, we aren't quite as accepting as kids are.
Rachel said that as this is around scarring, that the chickenpox scars, will they fade? Because it's been 2 years and they've got sort of lots of white scars, awful chickenpox.
Okay,
two
so
years
someone's
ago.
Got chickenpox scars. Yeah, chickenpox scars does, they do start to fade through time as any scar would. There are things that you can do to try and help scars to heal. So making sure you're putting SPF on them so that they don't get further damaged by the sun, ensuring you're moisturizing well, having enough protein and things like that in your diet to aid wound healing and things like that. And when they become adults, if it's still there and it's still upsetting them cosmetically, then they can have things like laser treatment and stuff like that to help. As with most scars, the chickenpox scars are no different, really. They will improve over time.
Liz has asked, grumbling mild pain right side in the morning after eating, could it be gallstones?
Our gallbladder is up in our right upper quadrant, so that right upper bit of the stomach, and it's there to store and to squeeze out this lovely stuff called bile, which helps break down fats that we consume through our diet. And so if you eat a fatty meal, our gallbladder tries to squeeze down, push this stuff out. But if you've got gallstones in that gallbladder, that can become quite sore and inflamed to do that, to push out that bile. And so it could be, if you are having right upper quadrant pain after eating a meal, especially if that meal has got fat. So, you know, I don't know what kind of breakfast you're eating, but if it's, you know, I don't know, if you're having a nice cheese sandwich for breakfast, then it could be something like that. So yes, it could be. I would always recommend popping to your GP whenever you've got any pains like that are persistent and not going away, and getting that examined, because your GP would just need to lay a hand on your stomach and just have a feel of that area and potentially get an ultrasound scan done, and it'd be a nice simple
okay
test
perfect
be.
Right,
I've
definitely
just
pop
seen
to your GP
one
then.
Here yeah this it says here this is from Charlotte. Is cough medicine really as bad for children as I've read?
Wow, that's so interesting. I've never read that.
See, no, I hadn't, but my mum had my kids over one week of the Easter holidays, and Gigi had a really bad cough, and she said well, I've given her some honey, lemon and ginger. And I was like, oh, okay. She went, because I'm not giving her cough medicine. And I was like, oh, right. Okay. Like, why not? She went, oh, I've heard terrible things about it. It just doesn't do anything. And I was like, oh, right. Okay. Hadn't heard it until like 2 weeks ago. So there's obviously something doing the rounds at the moment.
Well, it's not that it's terrible. It's not like, you know, going to do anything horrendous to your child. Having said that, it may not do anything. So there is limited evidence that cough medicine for both adults and children,
Benylin or something like that, which is what I grew up taking.
Yeah, actually does anything for the cough. And NICE, the National Institute of Clinical Excellence, have since issued a statement to say that actually using honey, lemon and ginger, it works just as well, if not better, than cough medicines. And cough medicines are, you know, they do have chemicals in them. So, and although those chemicals are tested and made sure that they're safe for all the children, you know, if you know that something you have in your kitchen fridge, you know, your fridge and your cupboards will work just as well, if not better, then you might as well use that.
They might as well use that.
I like that Corolovia or whatever it's called.
I like the ad.
Car.
How does it go?
Yeah.
How does the ad go?
Cornovia.
There we go. Something like that.
Yeah, that's it. Nicola says, low iron and heart palpitations following marathon training. Should I be worried?
So it may be that the iron and heart palpitations are linked and have nothing to do with the marathon training, or it could be all of them together. So we know that when you have low iron, we need iron to carry oxygen around our blood in our and to the rest of our cells. And so that includes to our heart muscles. And so when you've got low iron, you're getting less oxygen to all of your cells, you're getting less oxygen to your muscles, getting less oxygen to your heart, and you can develop things like palpitations. So it could be that she's got low iron and she's getting these palpitations. It could also be that she's training for the marathon and putting her body under even more stress, which therefore means that they need the muscles and everything needs even more oxygen. And so it's making it even worse than it had been before. Ultimately, we need to be treating the low iron. It's not anything else that we need to, you know, manage here. It sounds like we need to treat the low iron. So making sure, well, I guess it depends on how low it is. If you've seen the GP and they've told you it's significantly low and you need to take supplements, then taking those supplements. If it's borderline, then it's a matter of making sure that you're getting enough iron in your diet. So iron comes in, obviously, kind of red meats and things like that. But if you're a vegetarian or vegan, then you can get it through dietary sources that are plant-based. So things like green leafy vegetables, your spinach, your kale, your cavolo nero, whatever you want. But it's just that you have to eat so much more of it in order to get that same amount as you would from, you know, a smaller piece of meat. There are ways that you can help boost how much you absorb. So making sure that you have that iron alongside something with high vitamin C, because vitamin C helps to absorb the iron. So, you know, having a nice bowl of strawberries with your cavolo nero would be ideal. So something like that. But I think if correcting your iron doesn't help your palpitations, then you do also need to get a little ECG. So that's like a little tracing of your heart to see what's going on with your palpitations and why it's happening.
Yeah. I also find, Nicola, that when I get to this lady, Nicola, when I get heart palpitations, I'm really dehydrated. So if I'm not on top of my water, because I've got quite a low resting heart rate, and when I'm not on top of my water, or if I've not had my slow releasing sugars like bananas and things like that, I get really bad palpitations. So just maybe monitoring that as well, that would be like a advice I would give a friend.
Yeah, absolutely, because obviously training for the marathon, you're probably getting quite dehydrated, and your electrolytes might all be getting out of balance too. So just making sure you're having enough salts in your diet, having enough water in your water consumption as well, to just make sure that you're getting everything back into what you've been sweating out.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
Tips for dealing with PCOS. I'm worried I'm going to get diabetes because of it.
Ah, okay. PCOS has been linked to what we call metabolic syndrome, which is where you can develop issues with your blood sugar levels, so insulin insensitivity and obesity. And by managing your PCOS, you may be able to help manage those other issues. I guess in terms of PCOS, the treatments tend to be based on your symptoms. So some people, you know, still have regular periods with their PCOS and are not, you know, may not be bothered by either the facial hair or acne or, you know, whatever it is. So it kind of depends on what it is that's bothering you about the PCOS and how we treat it. But treatments usually include hormonal treatments, so things like the contraceptive pill. But in some people, you can also off-license give something like metformin, which helps manage your periods and regulation of periods, as well as helping to manage the risk of diabetes as well by helping your insulin levels and your blood sugar levels to stabilize too. So there are a few different ways to manage it, but I think it's a chunky topic, if I'm honest with you. And I think it requires a more in-depth kind of one-to-one chat about what it is exactly about the PCOS that's bothering you and why you're worried about the diabetes? Have you got a family history of it, for example? Are you overweight, as well as having the PCOS, you know, which might add an extra risk factor? Are there any other things that could be concerning you there?
Okay. Yeah. Definitely great. A trip to the GP potentially then. Ding dong. Hi, Dr. Sara. I'm Zoe and I've come to see you about my eye today.
Come on in.
Oh, thanks. Weirdly, myself and two of my closest friends have also had styes in the last month. Now, I got this stye, well, 4 weeks ago. I did what I thought was the right treatments, the hot compresses. I used chloramphenicol, the conjunctivitis ointment. I was using eye drops. It wasn't particularly pleasant. It sort of was going down into my face. I thought a week and it would be over. 4 weeks later, I still have on the inside of my eye quite a red lump, which is producing some very nice stuff. And it's now gone onto my waterline. I went to the pharmacy yesterday to try and get some golden eye. They said, here's the equivalent. And now they were like, four times a day, you have to use it, but it will go. Doesn't feel like it's ever going to go. What's going on?
So I guess it's a matter of working out whether this is definitely a stye or whether it could be something called a chalazion. Only because you said it's on the inside lower bit rather than just on the waterline.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Okay.
So a chalazion tends to be less painful and it's a bit more chronic. It's an infection on the inside edge of the eyelid.
Yeah.
And it's where the meibomian gland, the gland that secretes oil, is. And we secrete that oil in order to try and moisturize our eyes and the eyelashes and things like that. And sometimes if that gets clogged up, then it can build up and cause this chalazion. The stye, on the other hand, tend to be a bit more painful.
Right.
And they tend to be on that edge of the eyelid, so that waterline, you know, just where the eyelashes and the follicles come out.
Yeah.
And they tend to come on a bit more quickly and then eventually break open and drain. So I guess it depends on which of the two we're managing here.
I think I've got the first one.
Okay. Because, yes, a stye, bit of warm compress, you know, eventually breaks open, comes out, done. A chalazion can, firstly, take a lot longer. Secondly, it's not infected. So it's not that, so using chloramphenicol and things like that aren't necessarily going to help.
No.
It's just that it's more of a chronic infection on the inside. And so it's not going to get to that bit as well. The treatments at present are still the same, you know, is still the hot compresses to try and help encourage some of the gland oil to come out. It's still that gentle massage. You can try, if it became hot, red, you know, swollen in that way, then yes, you can use
antibiotics.
If you've already tried the drops and the ointments, then you can then escalate up to oral antibiotics if needed. But if it becomes, you know, chronic and stays there, then sometimes you need a little surgery just to cut it open and take out that little gland. But because I can't tell you definitely which of the two it is.
Okay. I mean, I think it is the first. I mean, I've tried it. I've tried all the drops and the ointments and it's just not shifting. It's staying put very much. Like it's found a bougie mansion and it just doesn't want to move
and
out.
It's
a squatter. It's currently squatting in my eye.
Keeps missing its flight home from my ether.
I think I need antibiotics, so I need to probably see my GP.
Sorry.
There's a question here from Ashley, and it's actually something that my daughter had. Someone said, how to get rid of molluscum without having to wait? It increases and can look sore. And someone else actually DM'd about it as well, just asking how to get rid of it.
So molluscum contagiosum is a virus that causes this lovely little rash, often in children. You can get it in adults, though. It causes kind of like this pearly little lesion with a little kind of dot in the middle. And if you squeeze it, sometimes you can get a little white pus coming out of it. Sounds delightful. And it's called contagiosum because it is contagious, so you can spread it quite easily. In the UK, we don't tend to actually treat it because it will go away by itself. But it can take up to 18 months, sometimes even longer in some, but, you know, usually around that kind of time frame. And so what we usually suggest is that you keep it covered up so that you don't spread it to other parts of your body. You don't share towels and things like that with other family members, so you don't spread it, you know, to each other. And you don't squeeze it, you don't pick it, because that can then get it infected. And then you may need antibiotics and things like that. For most children, they're not bothered by it. They don't care it's there. It's more usually the parent that looks at it and think, oh, I don't really like that. And that's where you want to get it treated. If you do want to get it treated, there are options out there. There are creams that you can get either over the counter. There are ones that can be prescribed. And there are also cryotherapy, so freezing them off. These are all things that can be done. But because it's not a harmful virus and because it doesn't tend to bother children, we usually say don't do anything at all. I would say if it is starting to ooze, get red, start crusting, you know, starting to look angry, starting to bother the child, then absolutely you may need some antibiotics to help manage it. And if it's starting to get itchy or just dry or irritated, then sometimes a steroid cream can help as well.
My daughter had it for probably about a year, and her preschool used to make her put plasters over it. And when the plaster, that obviously aggravated it, but then it all came off. Then it was like it peeled off. It was actually disgusting, but touch wood, it's gone.
Well, this is actually part of the treatment. So that most of these things that we use, like the freezing and the creams and all those things, are actually things that aggravate it enough that to make your own body's defense systems go attack that
to attack it,
and therefore treat the molluscum. It could very well be that the aggravation of the plaster actually ended up treating it in a way.
Maybe.
This one I'd love to ask the question, and I'm wondering just what your professional opinion is on it. Someone said, would you or have you ever had Botox, girls, given all the risk that we know about it? So what are our thoughts, and can we give an opinion on that, or would that be something we wouldn't want to touch?
What risks are they worried about?
Because what risks are there?
Anytime you put a needle in your face, there's a risk of infection, there's risk of bleeding, and there's risk of bruising. Those are the kind of three general things about needles in faces, full stop. With Botox specifically, there's also the risk of the Botox migrating to certain areas to give. So for example, if you were to Botox the middle bit of your, like your number 11 brow bit, and then sometimes that can migrate downwards towards the eyebrow, and that can then cause something called ptosis, where your eyelid starts, becoming droopy. There are ways to manage it. There are eye drops that counteract that. So if that happens, you can counteract it through eye drops. And you've got to remember that actually it doesn't last forever. It'll, you know, 3 to 6 months and the Botox is gone. Similarly, you can get
if asymmetry. Only it was 6 months, Dr. Sara.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah, it'd be nice, wouldn't it?
3 months. I'm like, has it been 3 months yet? Can I come? No, it hasn't. Oh, God, wait a couple of weeks.
It's been 2 weeks.
Well, this is it. I've been breastfeeding or pregnant for the better part of almost 5 years now. So these wrinkles, they're here to stay now, I'm afraid. The risks are risks, but they're actually not that significant for Botox. Things like fillers and stuff have far more significant risks associated with them. But Botox actually is one of the more safe cosmetic, you know, aesthetic treatments that you can have. Although, you know, I say this now and we probably get some, you know, long-term data on it in 40 years' time to find something else out. But at present,
it's okay. We did a whole podcast on tweakments, and actually one of the things that came out, it was a brilliant conversation, was that actually the risks lie in finding or in not finding a person that is actually qualified, you know, credited, and that, you know, so that is really, you see all these botched surgeries, that's really scary. That for me is risky. You need to find somebody that you know has done the qualifications, that is you're in really safe hands with, and that would be my best piece of advice.
Oh yeah, know the anatomy. Get someone that knows the anatomy, that's been trained in the anatomy, and knows how to correct any problems that do
exactly
arise.
I think it's all, like, I personally always feel safe going to someone who's actually medical, like a doctor or a nurse who does that kind of thing, because I feel like if anything goes wrong, they know about your health as well. Yeah. You know, like they can deal with, yeah, it going wrong, yeah, or like an allergic reaction.
Allergic,
yeah,
to it. Exactly.
Yeah.
100%. For sure. And for things, something like Botox, you actually need to have a medical license to, well, you need to be able to prescribe it. So it's interesting that if people are doing it, if they can't prescribe it, then they shouldn't be allowed to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Hysterectomies, tube tying, are they effective? Current thoughts on female sterilization.
So the answer to this lies in why you want to have the hysterectomy or the tubal ligation. So, you know, having the tubes tied for female sterilization. Is it because you want a definitive form of contraception? Is it because other forms of contraception haven't worked for you in the past? So, for example, we know that, yes, it's highly effective to have the female sterilization. Of course it is. You know, we're tying off or cutting off those tubes. So it makes it much harder for any egg or any sperm to meet. However, there are other forms of contraception that are almost as effective, if not more so. The coil, for example, the copper coil, is 99% exactly. And it's 99% effective. And it means you're not putting your body under a huge strain to have a major surgery. A hysterectomy is a major surgery.
You wouldn't have a hysterectomy unless you had to have a hysterectomy, would you? You might have your tubes tied, right? My mum had her tubes tied for contraception.
You can have your tubes tied, but she specifically mentioned a hysterectomy. Yeah. And that's a huge operation to have if it's just for contraceptive uses that you're asking about it. And you'd be hard pushed to find a clinician that would do it for just that. You know, perhaps you also have fibroids, or perhaps you also have something else that you're thinking, okay, well, I can manage the two together then. But without knowing your reasons, I think it makes it a little bit trickier to give you advice there. But I would say if it is for contraceptive use, why not try something like the copper coil first, see how that goes. People are always scared about things like the coil. People often say, oh, I don't want something inside me. And I get that. Like, you know, you feel like it's a foreign object, something like that. I get that. But you tend not to notice that it's there. You go,
can't feel
you
know, it
go
at all.
For exactly. You go for years without ever having to think about it. It's highly effective, and you also have that option to have it removed. Whereas, if for some reason, I don't know, you may find a new partner, you may find something else. You know, you decide you want to restart a family. You know, whatever it might be, you can still have that option. Whereas, obviously, with tube ligation and tying the tubes, it makes it a far more difficult procedure to reverse.
Oh, Dr. Sarah, that was amazing.
Loved it.
Yes.
Thank you.
So good. Yeah, so interesting.
Really good. Yeah,
you're
really
very clever. So clever. I'm always in awe of doctors because I'm like, how can you retain that much information when I cannot even remember what I've walked into the kitchen for?
Thank you so much. That was great. Really?
Yeah, brilliant, Dr. Sarah. Okay. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Take care. Bye.
Well, that episode was certainly needed, even if that was your fast track to a GP appointment, Zoe.
Shut up. Stop outing me. I know. Well, that was good, wasn't it? Because I don't have to sit on a call now at 8 o'clock in the morning and trying to get an appointment.
Yeah.
But when she said minor surgery, I was like, oh no.
I thought she was going to like say, I'll go to the chemist and buy this ointment, not like rip your eye open. I know that's not what really is going to happen. I'm joking. I'm just being dramatic.
Rip my eye open. Yeah,
no,
you are.
I know.
How lovely was Dr. Sarah? Brilliant. What an amazing conversation.
I wish she was my GP. She's lovely. I wouldn't want to go all the time.
Yeah. And also, we're so sorry if we didn't get to your question today. We did try and get through as many as possible, but obviously time constraints and all that. So if you didn't get Dr. Sarah, if she didn't answer your question today, then just try and get down to your GP if you need to. Don't leave it. And thank you so, so much for sending in all of your questions. They were absolutely brilliant. If you've got time to rate, review, subscribe, and give our podcast a little follow, that would be amazing. And before Georgia does her bit, I just want to say that Dr. Sarah has got a brand new book out, How to Have a Baby. So make sure you check that out as well.
Yeah, well, let's all go and buy a copy because she definitely knows what she's talking about. And if you have got any other suggestions for these Friday Q&As, I know this one was really popular, so we could do another one of these, or, you know, ask a dermatologist, whatever it is you want, please drop us a DM on Instagram on @madebymummers, and we'll be back on Tuesday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity Studios production.
Today's episode was produced by the wonderful Charlotte Mason.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.